But Mayor Castor, I'll start with you. You pledged to add 10,000 affordable homes to Tampa's inventory by the end of 2027, and you have said that that number is already around 6,000. But a recent Tampa Bay Times analysis found 60% of those homes are only in the planning stage. The Times reports about 1,300 are finished. So some of those are built outside city limits, some are rehabbed homes, according to the Times. Is 10,000 just too ambitious? Can it really be done?
All right. Yes, that is, you know, it's one of the most pressing issues, which I think every mayor in America could agree upon, is affordable housing. We have a need today, just in the city of Tampa, for 26,000 affordable units. And one of the first things I did when I came into office was to set up focus groups for those areas of significance for our city: transportation, workforce, sustainability, resiliency, and affordable housing. And so that group of 20 individuals, professionals dealing with housing, put together a roadmap for us. And we have been working very, very hard on that every day. We have done things that haven't been done in the past, a needs assessment to say exactly what we need, where we need that in the price ranges, and what types of homes that we need. We have also put an unprecedented amount, $150 million, from different streams into housing affordability in our community. And talking about what we need today, that's on top of the 1,000 people that are coming to our city each and every day. And so we have made great strides. There were some, I'll say, misleading information in there, because from the beginning, our housing affordability included rehabbing houses that people would have to move out of if they were condemned. So those types of housing were included, and it's a living document there. But I'm very proud of what our group has done, and we work every day, hard every day, to ensure that individuals have a roof over their head. If you look at when the pandemic hit, I mean, that's about 2 years out of the 4.5 year administration that we have. That began in the middle of March 2020. By April 2020, we already had a registration open for individuals to help them with mortgage and rent stabilization so they wouldn't be evicted. We helped over 19,000 people stay in their homes during the pandemic. So I'm very proud of what our team has done. I can say my 31 years of service that affordable housing is the most difficult issue to deal with. When you look at the funding streams, the developers, very few developers will jump into that arena. When you look at 40% increase in construction costs, 140% increase in our housing prices, that goal becomes more difficult, but that is still an aspirational goal that we are working towards each and every day. And we have close, well, it's over 5,000 homes that have either been built or in the process of being built. And last thing I'll say on that too is, looking at housing, we can't forget about those individuals that are homeless as well. That is an issue that is the responsibility in Hillsborough County of the county, but we know that it's concentrated in the city of Tampa. And so we worked for over a year with Catholic Charities in partnership to open Tampa Hope, which is wraparound residential services for 300 to 500 individuals that are experiencing homelessness. To date, in a year, we have had over 1,000 people transition through, 30% of those into permanent housing, and over 20% into full-time employment. And so, again, with the housing, there's so many issues, transportation, high-paying jobs that go into that. But I stand by our team, and I tell you, they work their ass off every day to put a roof over the heads of the people in our community.
Mayor Welch, let's stick with affordable housing. There have been calls to put rent control on the ballot. As you have pointed out, though, that's only going to get preempted by the state. It's not really an option. I checked out Rent Cafe. It said that the average price for an 870-square-foot apartment in St. Pete is just over $2,000 a month. That's just simply out of reach for people,
Absolutely.
Many people who work in the city. There's no easy solution, clearly. So, but what is the solution?
Well, from a government perspective, we have to do everything we can to try to increase that inventory. And when I read that article, Jane, it was amazing that you were taking a hit for preservation, because that's an important part, preserving the affordable housing that's already here. Our target is 8,000 units by 2030. That includes preservation and production of new units. I see Mike Sutton in the back with Habitat. I'm proud that they're going to be bringing home ownership opportunities to 18th Avenue South, hopefully next year. Mike, is that right? We have used the highest percentage of ARPA funding in the state and applied some $34 million of our ARPA funding to affordable housing. Our South St. Pete CRA, which is bringing in exponentially more than it was projected to, is really the reason we can keep some projects online, because the financing is so difficult for affordable housing. But the Fairfield Avenue apartments, where Tibbetts Lumber was, we're the first in the state to, under SB 102, to turn that into affordable housing, 264 units. And we're applying our own some $9 million of CRA money, along with other funding sources, to make that happen. So it's a really difficult task. Local government cannot solve the problem alone. We have to partner. We have to use dollars from the state, from the federal government when we can. And what we're fighting is that the secret of Tampa Bay, the secret of St. Pete, Clearwater, is out now. And now folks are moving here. They don't necessarily have to live where they work anymore. They see our housing costs as a bargain. My mom just turned 90. She's in the house I grew up in. She gets texts, phone calls, mails every week offering to buy her home. And so we have to educate folks. If you're in a home, understand the worth of that, because if you sell it, you can't buy anything comparable. And so it's all those things having to work together, and government cannot solve the problem alone. I think we're doing great work in St. Pete, Clearwater, and Tampa from a governmental perspective, but that gap is wide, and the market is driving it, and it's an uphill battle, and we need help from our other partners.
Mayor Onks, you do have to have that public-private partnership that Mayor Welch is talking about to really increase the supply. There has to be a benefit to developers as well. Are those partnerships happening in Clearwater, and has the Live Local Act, you know, been around long enough to see some, you know, that's helping at all so far?
I'm not sure about the Live Local Act. I know we do have partnerships that we are working on.
Can you hear me? Wireless.
Okay, I guess it's not working. It's on. Can't hear me? No? Okay. I'll take the mirrors. Turn this off. All right, now can you hear me? Okay. So we do have partnership. We are partnering. I guess there's a consortium. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but we do partner with St. Petersburg. We partner with Largo. We partner with Pinellas Park and the county. And we try to bring people in that are interested in affordable housing and workforce. Workforce housing is very important to us, because we have Clearwater Beach, and the people that work on Clearwater Beach certainly cannot afford to live out there. And so we are looking at that right now. One of the things that we are exploring very preliminarily is with the Bay Care people, Morton Plant, of doing a district there, a redevelopment district, because they're going to expand and put workforce housing there for their nurses and the people that work there and work in the community, because that's a huge employer in Clearwater. And we've begun discussions with them, and we'll see. Hopefully that will develop. But it is difficult, as Mayor Castor and Mayor Wells said, to find people that are interested in actually doing the building, with the costs and the payback and what they get in return. So it's a challenge.
And I think that the Live Local is going to have a huge impact. Ken said that they're already moving forward. We have a project as well. And from our standpoint, we're looking at taking at least six months, a minimum, off of the process. You know, when you look at the zoning issues, the permitting, all of the things that you have to go through, if you were able to get a complex period, much less affordable with all of the issues associated with that, built in a year and a half, that's considered breakneck speed in in any type of development.
All right, Mayor Welch, let's talk Rays. If all goes according to plan, the Tampa Bay Rays will stay put in St. Pete. The Rays will pay $700 million for their part of the new stadium, and then the city and county split it evenly the other $600 million. But as we well know, there are plenty of examples around the country of stadiums that came with big promises, Tropicana Field included, that really never came to fruition for their communities. So why should the community support this one?
Okay, technical difficulties. You know, I think there's really no other stadium project that you can compare to the historic gas plant, because it's not just a stadium. It's a stadium and the 60 acres surrounding that that was obtained with a promise. When I was at the Lakewood High School chairman, Fix Sanders, in the 1980s when my father was on the city council. And so it's not a blank slate. It is a promise of economic inclusion, which the Hines Rays Group has fully embraced. It's a promise of affordable housing. It's a promise of rebuilding the black business community that was uprooted and dislocated. And it's all those things combined and having that 86 acres on the western edge of a downtown St. Pete that is emerging. It's much different than it was not 20 years ago, but even 10 years ago. And it gives us an opportunity with a $50 million community benefits commitment, with a 30% goal for minority and women-owned business participation, for 30,000 construction jobs that we can turn into careers, whether you're in construction trades, carpentry, you name it. We can get folks into that job stream. It's different from any other stadium deal in the country. So it's not just a stadium. It is an opportunity for equitable economic advancement and inclusion that's been promised in this community for 40 years. And for the first time, we have a partnership to make that happen. The partnership between the City of St. Pete, the Pinellas County Commission, the TDC. Thank you, Commissioner Flowers, for your support. And the community and the Hines Rays Group, which brings real capacity to this effort. That hasn't happened in 40 years, and that's why this will be successful. And there's never been a mayor who grew up on the very site and was a family that was dislocated and lost a church, lost a family business, and have seen and lived these promises. And now we've got this coalition of folks, a coalition of folks who are willing to make this happen now in 2023. That's why this is different. And folks want to play with numbers. Well, I'm an accountant by trade, USF St. Pete, and there are different ways to look at it. But look, in Atlanta, we took a trip to Minneapolis to look at Target Field, and none of those areas did the team pay more than half. You had the county come in paying more than the city, and the city is able to play our commitment without raising taxes or decreasing any of our other services. We're in a good place, and when I ran for mayor, this is what I told folks I would work for, a partnership for progress. That's exactly what we have. We're in a good place, and I'm very hopeful that our city council will approve the agreements that we bring forward to them.
Mayor Castor, there was simply no appetite for public money to go to a stadium in Tampa, but do you see any pitfalls with the plan in St. Pete, and if so, what are they? Was that diplomatic enough? And if it were to go south, would Tampa still be on the table?
Oh, well, first of all,
wow.
I don't know how you expect me to answer that question. But no, we have said from the beginning that the Rays need to stay in Tampa Bay, and clearly, we did our best on the Tampa side, and Mayor Welch and Pinellas County, St. Pete, made their proposals over here, and so there are going to be issues as it goes through. There's no doubt about that. I mean, no one does endeavors to create what they are creating over here. As Mayor Welsh said, it's not just the stadium, it's an entire community. And so there are going to be issues that arise. But I think that as long as everyone works together towards that common goal, that it will be incredibly successful, not just for Pinellas County and St. Pete, but for the entire Tampa Bay region. So I think it's wonderful. And there is, you know, there's no reason to think that it's going to go south. So it's all good. You know, we're here. Tampa's here. But this is a wonderful win for our region, and it's going to be a spectacular project when finished.
And Holly, I'd just like to thank Mayor Castor. We actually do like each other. We actually have lunch, the three of us, on a quarterly basis when we can. And just her conduct has been the consummate professional throughout this. And we knew one way or the other there would be a deal. And she's been very supportive. So I just want to thank you for that publicly, Jane. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Well, speaking of baseball, Mayor Angst, the Phillies, they want to expand the stadium. They want to revamp the ballpark village all around BayCare Ballpark. Estimates I've seen on that are somewhere north of $500 million. So where does that all stand right now? And do you have any concerns that, you know, the pot of money for the Pinellas bed tax between the stadium and what might need to be done for beach renourishment might cut into those plans?
What a great question.
thank you.
As someone who sits on the TDC board, I'm assured there is plenty of funding when the right project comes forward. So back, taking a step back, the Phillies came forward probably 18 months ago with an initial plan, and then they were going to move it forward. They had an ownership issue. One of the owners passed away and did not have very good estate planning. So there was a huge amount of money payable to the IRS. So that made them take a step back. They had to bring in another owner. Miraculously, that owner got 18% of the previous owner's piece of the pie, and that exactly came out to what they owed the IRS, miraculously. So right now they're talking to us about coming in with about a $60 to $65 million initial project and then maybe phasing the larger project in over a period of 3 to maybe 8 years, depending. It's a great plan. They have bought the Drew Street corner behind Kane's Furniture, and that whole corridor, that 7-mile corridor in Clearwater, is our next big economic opportunity. We have identified about 600 parcels there for possible economic development. And we've streamlined the process to make it very easy, kind of one-stop shopping, for everything but dirty industry. So anything else is on the table. And the Phillies, if they put $350 million of their own dollars into that shopping center and build a mixed-use project, which what they're talking about eventually, it's going to be a huge, huge bonus for us in spurring on that economic development there. So that's coming out of their pocket. The plan that they initially talked to us about was somewhere in the $330 million plan. Which would go before the Pinellas County government with the TDC money and our money, and plus then they would put in at least half of that. That is on hold. Right now they're coming forward with a $60 million plan, which we look forward to seeing hopefully sooner than later.
Well, let's keep talking about Clearwater development. You're trying to awaken the waterfront in the downtown. You've had the $84 million Imagine Clearwater, the Sound, Coachman Park. Voters have approved a $400 million mixed-use development. But as we know, there's at least 176 parcels that are vacant right now, and those have been purchased by companies connected to Scientology parishioners. They're vacant. They need to come to life to make the rest of this a success. So what is the status of a potential land swap that has been discussed with the Church of Scientology?
Well, when we talk about downtown, there are three key partners. There's the Church of Scientology, there's the Pinellas County government, and then there's the City of Clearwater. We're working with Pinellas County government right now as they are going to move to the Ribbon-Icott Center to put one campus there, about 27 different parcels. So we're talking about that. We have had preliminary discussions with the Church of Scientology, very preliminary, about some land swap. We haven't seen as a council, and we have a couple of council members here, Lena Teixeira and Kathleen Beckman, what those plans are. But I am looking forward to seeing what that is, because we need to start getting some of those properties, especially on Cleveland Street, in our key area downtown where the businesses, where the people park and then they walk by the restaurants down to Coachman Park or to the Sound for the concerts. We need to have more of them activated. So we're in preliminary discussions. We hope that's going to come to fruition sooner than later. And once we get a couple of things like that going, then I think the ball can really start rolling. There are always issues with those types of things, so we'll see what transpires. But we are working very closely, though, again, with Pinellas County. And that whole corridor there where the courthouse is, and Mayor Walsh, you're very familiar with that because you were a county commissioner, that has great economic possibilities there for a mixed use. It's a very walkable area down to our Coachman Park and to the Sound. So we're anxious to get that going, and we think it all is going to be part and parcel of that in our discussions with the Church of Scientology.
And just to follow up, what about David Miscavige really seems to want that 1.4-acre site on Pierce? And there's been talk of the potential that if he were to get that, that he would go back to the plan that was put out there in 2017 of retail and a theater and a bowling alley. What do you think about that? Do you trust that? Could that happen?
It could. I'll be honest with you, I haven't been over to the church since I was reinstated as the mayor. I have not seen what that plan is. I know Frank Hibbert was very, and I think our council members have seen it, but I have not. I was invited one night at 9 o'clock after a council meeting when I was leaving the next morning at 6 o'clock in the morning for a vacation, so I had to skip that. Hopefully I can get over there and see, but I do think there are opportunities, and I do think there's something else that he wants even worse than that. So we are now talking to him about that. And that's a carrot that is very important to them, and the city manager has begun discussions about that.
What?
Okay. I was waiting to be asked, so. They are building a project behind their super building, and they want a small portion of Garden Street abandoned. And there's virtually no through traffic there. When I look at it, I don't see an issue with that. But, okay, if that's something that they want, what do we get in return? And are we going to get some of the properties on our super block activated? And are we going to get some of the other things that you talked about in the works and discussion phase? So that's kind of where we are. And again, that's between the city manager. Unfortunately, and I don't think I'm out of school for saying this, we had a city manager that got out ahead of the commission, council a year ago, and he unfortunately is no longer with us, maybe fortunately. And he cut a deal with Scientology behind the scenes without having council's permission. And they didn't even know what was going on. And that's one of the reasons why he's no longer here. And I've had a good relationship with members of the church from my first tenure. I was the first mayor that actually talked to them and recognized that they were an important part of the city. So they were calling me well before anybody knew I was going to be mayor again. And I said, look, the city manager cannot make this deal without the council's approval. You need to get with the council and tell them what the plan is so they have to approve it. Then the city manager can do the deal. That's our form of government. So that
I need like an hour with you guys. I've only got 6 minutes left. And I got to talk about traffic, right? So let's move on to Mayor Castor. But there's a lot of follow-up there. Okay, we all know there is crippling traffic, not a secret. Your plan to tackle that has hit some roadblocks, though, first with the court shooting down the all-for transportation tax, and then the city council voting down your proposed tax hike. So what is Plan C for traffic and congestion?
Yeah, that's, I think, for the entire region,
yes.
And it's our Achilles heel. And I always say, people always say they're all for mass transit. And I said what they really mean is we want other people to take mass transit so there's room for me on that road. Or our idea, as you guys have heard me say many times, our idea of mass transit is more than two people in an SUV. So we've got to get these solutions in place. And when you think that the affordable housing takes so long with so many different elements going into it, transportation isn't as difficult, but it takes I tell our group that their mascot's not a snail, it's a dead snail. It's like there's plans, but nothing ever goes into fruition. So we've moved things along in our city as quickly as we can, but I can tell you the larger issues that are going to be some solutions, or the not issues, but solutions. One is Brightline. Bemitra Simmons took a delegation of about 50 people down to Miami. We took the Brightline up to Orlando. It was fascinating. And so the plan to come from Orlando to Tampa is mapped out, is hopefully in the works, hopefully, but you know, things can get derailed. We took a bus ride back from Orlando to Tampa, and a few of the people complained to Bemitra that they were going to get caught in traffic on I-4, and she said, well, that's kind of the plan. Everybody will support this. And then for us in the city, we have our streetcar that goes from Ybor City through Channelside to Water Street in downtown Tampa, and it's the second most ridden line in the nation behind Kansas City. And we have plans in place to expand that through downtown. So that will take care of a great deal of congestion in our downtown core area, looking at those bus rapid transits, a number of different solutions. The issue is we don't lack for the ideas or the solutions, we lack for the funding in that. So we're hoping to get what will be close to $600 million back from the state in the All for Transportation funding. And we have gone from All for Transportation, the millage, and now we are looking at a federal program, Build America, and it's long-range, low-interest loans for transportation solutions. And so we're looking at that. That's now those avenues. We also are doing things like complete streets, providing bike lanes, trying to get people in alternative forms of transportation. And then just in our city, out walking, we received a $25 million grant to do a river walk on the west side of the Hillsborough River that will connect a number of neighborhoods all the way from South Tampa, West Tampa, downtown, all the way around on a 12-mile walking, biking path through our downtown, and that can be used as a mode of transportation. But looking at solutions for our city, but then also we have to look regionally as well. And so that's something that looking at our MPOs, the possibility of consolidations there, our bus system, those types of things. When we go to ask for federal and state funding, we need to do that with one voice. And that hasn't been done historically. Regions that do that get a lot more funding on the federal and state level. And that's what we need. We have the solutions. We have the ideas. We've got to get money, but we have got to get moving on these.
I'm literally on the first page out of three pages of questions, and I have 1 minute left. So I'm going to put this question to all of you, and Mayor Welch, I'll start with you. Just your outlook for this new year. I mean, here we are. It's an election year. We're growing so fast as a region, as a state. Everything is costing more money. It seems like in an election year, sometimes half the country can't talk to the other half of the country. We're deeply divided. I can't tell you how many stories I have done this year on things like declining mental health. And you know, sometimes it just feels like there's a lot of pessimism out there. How are you feeling about this new year?
I'm feeling fantastic. So we've concentrated on being inclusive and in touch. And so one of the things we've done is to have City Hall on tour, where we actually take all of our departments out to four different areas of the city. And folks turned out. We had local vendors and food, so folks would come out at dinner time. But we got high energy, a lot of good ideas coming from folks. They're excited about what we're doing on housing, what we're doing with the historic gas plant, what we're doing in parks and rec. Folks are just excited. And so at the local level, we don't have a lot of the drama that you see at perhaps the state and the federal level. We try to focus on...
Bars open.
We have pillars for progress, and it's what we do that actually impacts the community. Safe and healthy neighborhoods, infrastructure, environment and resiliency, education and youth opportunities. Everything we ought to do, everything we do should have an impact in the community. And that's what we focus on, and that's how we stay away from a lot of the partisan rancor. When Hurricane Idalia is coming or the no-name storm, folks don't really care whether you're red or blue.
True.
They care that you've got the services they need when they need it. And they care about, you know, we also talk to young folks. We had a group of young men for our Kwanzaa celebration last week. And we went around in the room and asked these young men. They were concerned about homelessness. They were concerned about job opportunities, transportation. So when we actually can talk to each other and look each other in the eye as human beings and have a conversation about our community, we do well. It's when we get put in the buckets and I can't talk to you because you have a red dress on. You know, that's what's happening at other levels. And my concern is that that doesn't filter down in this election year. We need to work based on truth. For example, we know our mail ballot system works. It works well. It's worked in the state of Florida. It's not some Democratic conspiracy because the legislature has been Republican forever under that mail ballot system. It works for everybody. We ought to stand up and say that. And so it's what do you stand for as elected officials? Are you going to do the right thing to move us forward? Or are you going to go to your team and play ball by a different set of rules? I'm concerned about the election. Also concerned about us having an honest conversation for our children and their children in terms of sea level rise. Hurricane Idalia was 100 miles off our coast and had that impact. A no-name storm a few weeks ago. Those things are going to continue to happen, and through the work of the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council and others, we know what climate change is going to do in the next 20, 30, 40 years. How are we integrating that into our planning, where we build, how we build? What's going to happen to the barrier islands that produce most of the bed tax in 30 years? We've got to start having those conversations, not for our sake, but for our kids and their kids. And so, to me, it's all about having truthful conversations about where we are and doing the right thing.
Mayor Oz?
Well, I share a lot of the same concerns as Mayor Welch. I'll take a little different tact. I think I'm always a half-class full type of individual. Interest rates are going to come down this year. If you look at all the experts, they say that the Fed's going to drop the basis or by 225 to 275 basis points, interest rates. So hopefully with interest rates coming down, housing prices will stabilize, rent will stabilize, maybe even go down in some of the apartment complexes. So I look forward to that happening and getting the economy clicking a little bit better and getting those types of opportunities with interest rates lower for people who right now are sitting on the bench and not being able to do anything. If they sell their home, they have no place to go because they can't afford it or they can't afford the interest rates. We have some great projects in downtown Clearwater that you've talked about. I think our downtown has great opportunity. Clearwater Beach is booming. You know, we pay the most in the bed taxes into the county. We have a large number of tourists every year. 37%, I just got some numbers from Brian Lowak today from TDC, 37% of the domestic visitors that come to Pinellas County come to Clearwater Beach. 27% of international come to Clearwater Beach that come to Pinellas County. So we have a lot of new projects out there, infill redevelopment, knock something down, build it back up. We've made it easy with our codes to do that. So we're looking forward to that, booming Clearwater Beach, getting downtown better, getting interest rates down, getting some of the transportation issues, hopefully, taken care of. One figure that stunned me when I heard this, 11% of the households in Clearwater have no vehicle. 45% have one vehicle. Now, can you imagine a family with kids that go to school and sports and extracurricular activities with one vehicle? So transportation is key, as Mayor Castor and Mayor Welch have talked about. We've done this a number of times in different venues, but that's a key part of the whole issue of workforce and getting them mobile enough so they can do things. So I'm optimistic.
Mayor Castor, when everybody feels sometimes like, you know, you can't hardly speak to each other or we're fighting and it's an election year and there's going to be lots of who knows what to come, what's your feeling this year?
I'm incredibly positive. And I think that we are very, very fortunate to live in the Tampa Bay area and we should all take stock of that and be thankful every day. And we all work together to lift up the Tampa Bay area, and not just in the cities, but the surrounding counties as well. And as Mayor Welsh said earlier, the rest of the country and the world, for that matter, are discovering what we have known, that we get the privilege of living in paradise, and people are coming here. So one of the things that I feel is vitally important, and one of the reasons I ran for the office of mayor, is that as our community grows and as the region grows, that we ensure that we maintain our diversity and our history, what has made us paradise. We have to ensure that we maintain that for the generations to come, and telling those stories and ensuring that those that move here understand where they're coming to. And one of the things with the divisiveness nationwide, that we also have to do our part and understand the responsibility in countering that. It just seems that it's a negative. If you choose A, you should have done B, and if you chose B, it should have been A. Shouldn't be like that. If we take stock of our similarities, they far, far outweigh our differences. And we need to stay focused on that.
I'm way over my time, but I thank you all very much.
Thank you, Holly.
And as always, I've got lots more questions, so hopefully in the coming year I'll get to ask those, and I will appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I just have to say thank you to JC for inviting me to do this. He has been so wonderful in so many ways, including right before we were supposed to go over some things for the show. I was sick, my kids were sick, and I'm like, JC, I'm so sorry, I just can't do it right now. He's like, relax, be well, take care of yourself, it'll be fine. He's been wonderful, so thank you so much, JC, I appreciate it. And thank you all.
We have two new members. Thank you, Lorna Tiller, and thank you, Terry Lipsy Scott, for joining. For years, the club has had these coffee mugs that we've given as gifts. And under the leadership of Amy Shore and the new board of directors, they have switched to bourbon glasses. And so, Holly, the mayors, Ms. Williams, and our new members, get your bourbon glass. And if you join, tonight, you'll get your bourbon glass, and our Bank OZK has gifts to your left as you exit. Thank you, Bank OZK, for being our bank. Esther Matthews is the president of the St. Petersburg branch of the NAACP. Will you please stand, Esther? Terry Lipsy Scott is our leader in our effort to build a world-class African-American museum that tells the history about enslaved persons who have achieved greatness the 400 years that they have been on this land. Terry Lipsy Scott. Okay, it's that time of the evening where members of the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club may line up, state your name, ask your question, and take your seat. Of course you know, don't give a speech, don't be long, ask your question, and take your seat. Make sure that you are a member of the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club who has paid their dues and are in good standing. We're at the Vinoy Resort and Golf Club. I have been on my best behavior, you can admit. So thank you. We're ready. The owl mic. Here
we go. Good evening, Andrake McMullen. My question is for our two mayors, Mayor Welsh and Mayor Castor. I attended the Volocopter demonstration. So where are we with urban air mobility and getting a taxi, an urban air taxi from St. Pete to Tampa? Are you negotiating? Are you talking about it? You're working on it? Are we going to be the first in the nation?
That's hopeful. I've had a couple of presentations, three, I believe, from three different air mobility companies, and these were all pre-COVID. And they're very interested in Florida coming here because of the geographic layout, Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa Bay area down to Miami. And the Volocopter was one. Another one was sort of a fixed wing with a pilot, but all battery operated. So we're open to any solutions. I haven't had any presentations lately on that, but we had one company that went as far that had already identified a location for passengers, and up to four was what I saw with the future. The issue for me was the cost. I asked, how much does it cost? And he goes, oh, it's nothing. Said, it'd be about the same cost as a cab ride. And I thought, okay, a cab ride from here to Miami plus four is pretty expensive. But those are the types of things that we need to look at for the future. Another one is water. Why would we ignore water as a viable form of transit? And it's a shame that our county commission, Hillsborough, voted down the water taxi solution from Apollo Beach to MacDill Air Force. But we need to consider, and housing all solutions, transportation all solutions, sustainability, resiliency all solutions.
So we're highly interested as well. I know I'm dating myself, but every time I think of that, I'm thinking Jetsons. Yeah. I mean, that's what it's going to look like. But we were at the demo together at Tampa International. We're excited about it. I know James Corbett, our CDA administrator, is here. He's had conversations. We'd love to have them on this side of the bay. And it's not tied to an airport. It can be multiple structures that serve as the landing sites. I'll be on version 2.0. of the test, but in 20 years, transportation is going to look much different, getting folks point to point. So we're excited about it. Hi, Commissioner.
We can hear you.
You can hear me. Okay, I have a voice that travels. please contact David Green when it comes to
waterborne transportation through PSTA as well as airborne transportation, because T-BARTA started those plans. We had them in place, and then unfortunately the state legislature dissolved T-BARTA. So contact David Green. All of that has already been mapped out. You can just take it from there. Here's my question. Don't throw anything at me. We have provided millions of dollars to businesses to attract them to come here. This is for all three. We've provided millions of dollars to attract those businesses to come here. Some of them have done very well. Some of them are still coming up out of the ground. Yet, when we look at some of our minority corridors in all three cities, over the years, they are still struggling. And they look nothing like some of the more downtown corridors or the beach areas. While we have CRAs and all of that, it still is not enough, because the inequality had occurred for so many years, it's going to take much more to bring them up. Please tell me, why does that discrepancy still exist, and what are your plans outside of CRA, outside of all of that? What would be your plans to provide the same type of revenue structure to those corridors that we're providing to some of our other corridors for other persons that are coming here and are excelling in business?
Thank you, Commissioner. I knew that was going to be a tough question when you prefaced it that way. But I do think this is a providential time for our community, as you well know, because of the businesses that did exist on 16th Street and the Deuces, for example, before the interstate came in and disrupted those businesses, and before the Tropicana Field dislocation in the late 1970s. When that was declared an area of blight and folks were removed for economic development. We now have an opportunity connected with the historic gas plant and the $50 million in community benefits, with the promise to include and rebuild that ecosystem for black businesses ingrained in that agreement as well, with the Hines Raise team embracing the 23 principles that we outlined in the RFP, combined with the CRA that, thanks to the county's support, is now projected to bring in some $300 million for poverty reduction and wealth creation in that area. We are planning to rebuild those corridors and make sure that the businesses from South St. Pete can remain in South St. Pete. So I think it's a matter of timing, it's a matter of having resources, and I think it's a matter of having leadership that makes that a priority. And I think we've got an extraordinary opportunity to make that happen. Now, we also need to have property owners who share that vision. We've got a couple of property owners who are just absentee landlords, and they're not preserving what those corridors should be. You know what 16th Street used to be. You wouldn't see the madness that we see there now, and it needs to stop, and we need to speak to it. We need to make sure it's an area we can all be proud of, and that is not happening to the degree it needs to be. So there are going to be some tough conversations in order to get back to what 16th Street and the Deuces used to be, but we're committed to making that happen.
And I can talk about some of the things that we are doing from the city standpoint. We just had a small business forum in Tampa today with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, Wells Fargo, and we had Clearwater, St. Pete, and Tampa there and talked about all of the initiatives that we have. So with us, with the city, some of the steps that we have taken are bridges to business, where we have brought in hundreds of small business owners. We have over 25,000 businesses in the city of Tampa. Close to 24,000 of those are small businesses. So they are the backbone of our economy in the city. And some of the steps that we've taken in the city, the bridges to business, bringing businesses in and walking them through the process of getting certified to do business with the city of Tampa. We also have apprenticeship requirements. We've just finished the Tampa City Center in East Tampa, 600,000 square feet, four buildings, has a workforce apprentice program there as well. And we had over 30% minority businesses involved in that construction project, a first for our city. Looking at not only sheltered market contracts, but breaking down larger contracts into smaller so that businesses can apply for those contracts. Another are infill with affordable housing, taking lots and providing those to small contractors, first time they've done business with the city of Tampa, minority, that may not have the funding to be able to build that house. We can front that or get that for them and they can pay it back. Mentoring programs where we have, I call it the speed dating for business, where we bring the larger contractors in, developers, and the smaller contractors come in and talk about the services that they can provide. And that's been incredibly effective. Also, bridges to business, providing the resources that a small business owner needs. As we all know, the majority of those small businesses go out of business, no matter where they're at. So you have the idea, you're the CEO, but now you're HR, you're the janitor, you're the accountant. So what services do you need from us that will help you stay afloat? We just also appointed a small business navigator with the city of Tampa, who is just knocking it out of the park. There is a lot to be done, I agree with you, but again, we as the city, our responsibility, we have to do all that we can and also ensure that we're bringing private corporations in to do their part as well.
And I'll just speak real briefly about our North Greenwood community. I see some ladies here that came with a very good proposal for us. We just started a CRA there, which the County Commission approved, and we are looking to redevelop the Main Street down through past the rec center. We're purchasing as a city, we're pending purchase of a building to renovate it and then hopefully kickstart getting businesses there. And they came forward with a really pretty cool container store business type of plan, and it looked pretty interesting, where you'd have people that could go and have a cup of coffee, go and have a meal, go and just spend time spend time there, have a glass of wine. And I told him I want to uncork the first wine bottle when it opens. But so we are we're taking baby steps, but we are looking very closely at what we can do to help revitalize that community and get businesses there so people can make a living, go visit their local businesses, and be successful.
Harvey Landris, thank you for coming, and I'm sure you're glad to see so many people here tonight. My question relates to the border crisis in Texas, with Texas reportedly sending busloads recently of migrants to other cities around the country because these reportedly say they're overwhelmed. It's possible that any of your cities could be targeted. Well, busloads come, and I'm sure citizens wouldn't want that. My question is, do you see any realistic solution to the border crisis? And if so, what is it?
I think it's a realistic immigration process, and to not continue to focus on trying to keep everyone out of our country, but making a path towards entry in. We're all immigrants in the United States. And so I think that our federal government needs to spend time on that process of coming through. And we do get, reports, monthly reports of individuals that are coming to our city. And again, welcoming individuals. If you look at, I don't know what the latest statistic is. I saw in the New York Times yesterday, but the number of jobs that are available and then the number of people that are unemployed, I mean, there's probably three or four jobs out there for every American. And we have to be realistic about some of the jobs that Americans don't want, that immigrants would be more than happy to come in and take those jobs. And the whole idea, as Holly talked about, this sowing of fear in our country about this idea of lawlessness is just not factual, especially when it's focused on immigrants, because immigrants statistically create or commit a very, very small fraction of crime. The individuals are trying to flee for a number of reasons, but I'm not saying that there isn't an issue on the borders. I'm not saying that, but I think that we need to spend time and energy as a nation on making that pathway into America viable for individuals that want to come.
So where did Harvey go? There you are. Okay. So it's a long answer, but campaign finance reform and fair districts. Until you have true campaign finance reform and fair districts, Congress isn't going to do its job. When is the last time you had a local government have a government shutdown? It doesn't happen. And they have known about the immigration issue for years and years, and they failed to fix the problem. So until Washington gets its act together, and to me, that's not going to happen until you get folks who actually care about policies instead of their safe districts, we're not going to solve the problem.
Good evening. My name is Roxanne Durney. Excuse me. I have just a couple quick hits for you here. The first one I'd like to ask about is if you would consider changing your building codes. We have all these huge condo towers going in St. Petersburg, and I know you do as well in Tampa. And they all had trash chutes. But what the builders never put in is chutes for recycling. So if you changed your building code that said, if you're going to put in a building that has a chute for garbage, you must also include a chute for recycling.
Great idea. Okay?
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you, yes. Are you a member of the Psycho Tiger Bay Club?
No.
Okay, well, thank you. That's exactly what we've been working on.
Thank you. My name is Nathan Broomer. My question is for any and all of the mayors. I would prefer to ask you questions about education or healthcare or housing. or environment, but I am instead going to refocus on the vibrancy of the diversity of our region. As someone who grew up here in Tampa Bay, is proud to be a USF Bull and a Stetson Law alum and a former public school teacher in Hillsborough County. I want to talk about the economic impact in the realities of the shift given the sessions we've had out of Tallahassee, looking ahead to what we're seeing right now. So I know the economic impact studies that we've seen in our region by what the LGBTQ community has brought forward. I watched in my tenure on St. Pete Pride and leading that organization that triple and quadruple. What are we going to do this year if we see more legislation that ties the hands of our local municipalities? What can we do? What can you do as leaders to embrace and ensure that long-term economic viability that has made our community so successful here in Tampa Bay?
So what we have done is use of all of our local authority to exhibit what we are about in St. Pete. You know our mantra is, we are St. Pete. That means everybody in St. Pete.
Yeah.
And we live that. We have just filled our chief equity officer position for the first time in our history. And I think he was here, Carl Lavender. He may have had to leave, but so we're moving forward with equity. Equity is good business. It's built into our RFP, for example, for the historic gas plant. And we're just going to continue to live our truth. And when we hear of bad legislation coming down the pike, we're going to talk to our legislators and tell them why we think that's a bad idea. My fraternity, for example, Omega Psi Phi, will be coming to Tampa for our conclave next year. There was a big debate whether they should come. But after that debate, we thought it was better to come and talk about what we're about and not abandon the state of Florida because of what's coming out of Tallahassee. So we've always got to speak truth to power, and we'll continue to do that.
Thank you, Mayor.
And we have taken steps. You know, you have to communicate that the Tampa Bay region is a very welcoming region for everyone, not only in the nation, but worldwide. And we have done that. We have all of the 9 HCBU, the Divine Nine, when we had, and cover your ears, when we had the Kappas here, I believe it was 15,000 individuals. I know. He said that was just the warm-up. The warm-up. But anyway, they have representatives from each of those fraternities and sororities, and afterwards, each of them, those groups, came forward and said they're either having a meeting or looking at having their annual conference here. And you can't just sit back and hope that people come. We make those calls and have those conversations. And the information that I have is that Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, and Miami have had close to double-digit cancellations in conferences and conventions. We've had zero, because we let people know that you are welcome in this community. And again, it's our diversity, it's the vibrancy, it's the history, the culture of Tampa Bay that makes it so wonderful. And we have to make sure that we preserve that.
And I know our TDC markets certain groups that you discussed very aggressively, and it's an education process. That come here, this is a diverse community. Our beaches, our cities, our museums, the whole Bay Area, and you are more than welcome.
Thank you, Mayors.
This is our last question from the night. Go ahead, Esther.
Esther Matthews, I'm standing here as a small minority woman-owned business, and thank you, Mayor Castor, you touched very specifically on some data that I saw. My question in particular is, how intentional across the board will each of you be with your administration to ensure that minority women-owned businesses are on a equal playing field with other businesses? I hear the 30%, but that's not enough. And I hear you, Mayor, baby steps. Thank you, Marilyn, for what you guys are doing. And I know that Mayor Welch is doing things, but what I want to hear is, with intention, how are we going to ensure, in particular, priority being given to ensure that all minority and women-owned businesses are on an equal playing field?
Well, thank you for your leadership. I'm so excited about where we are in St. Pete. our city council, and thank you, Madam Chair, did pass a MWBE ordinance that is being implemented right now. We opened an Office of Supplier Diversity in response to the disparity study. And we've got great partners in the county who, without a disparity study, were able to exponentially increase the amount of business going to small businesses under Dr. Cynthia Johnson in the small business program. So we're learning from that. A lot of that is reducing barriers, you know, talking to businesses, understanding what barriers they're running into and doing business with the city. So we're very intentional about doing that. And as you know, we've built those targets into the historic gas plant and development, which is the largest development we'll see in our lifetimes. We all do better when we all do better. And those businesses, when you talk to young people who say they don't see a way to connect with opportunity, there's so many ways that they can be successful through an entrepreneurial route that they might not even know about. So it's all hands on deck. Another hire that Carl Lavender has is an education and youth director. We're down to a finalist for that. And so we want to make sure folks are connected to those career opportunities from high school on. And so it's definitely a priority for us.
And out of the meeting, the small business meeting that we had today, I said if I summed up the 2.5 hours in two words, it would be collaborate and communicate. Because government's not going to do it by themselves. It's got to be the private industry. It's got to be the community. It's got to be government. And it also has to be the small businesses as well to understand the services that are available and how we can ensure that you are successful. And again, having those Mayor Muntz from Lakeland was in the event today, and he said everyone's born with the same ability, just not the same opportunity. And so that is leveling that playing field. And it has to be intentional, as you said. And you do that, I think, from our position through that communication, having the advisory committees making sure that you're going out and making presentations to the diverse group. Black women in construction, you know, I've met with them. You know, that's a small group. And you meet with individuals and you hear what the issues are and what they feel because they're in it every day. So what is it from the small businesses that you need and how can we help to ensure that that gets done? And we haven't reached the level that we should. But it's not for lack of trying. And I can say for myself, and I know that my two friends here as well, that it is intentional, but there's a lot of work to be done.
Well, again, baby steps. Baby steps. We work through our CRA. We welcome anyone who wants to open a business in Clearwater, and we have people that work with them, help them with grants, help them with education. And certainly we will do our best to welcome minority females into that category and hopefully get more women businesses.
And I want to just to end on a very, very positive note. So today I'll tell you one feel-good story. So I met a young woman at a ribbon cutting. She had she has a cybersecurity paragon business, and she opened it, I swear, like a day before COVID. And so, you know, we cut the ribbon, and she had to flip her business model like in a day. And she did so, and she flipped it to doing the certification testing for individuals that need certificates and was very successful. She and her husband both retired from the military. She wanted to get into the Department of Defense and that contracting. And that's almost impossible to get into for most people. They have no bid contracts. And then if you're a woman and you're a minority, and so I knew from my work as a police officer, Homeland Security, I knew a number of other women contractors, brought them in, they mentored her, got her foot in the door, and she went from she and her husband and maybe two employees, she has 19 employees today and won a National Cybersecurity of the Year business. So you got to have the opportunity, and we have to make sure that we provide that.
Will you help us thank the mayor for being with us tonight?